Good morning, everybody. Why don't we take our seats and we'll begin. Let's begin with the invocation. If I could, turn it to Mr. Cadane to do the invocation. Please rise.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Lord, let us glorify you in all that we do. Guide us, lead us in your will. Father, let us be here for you, not ourselves. The things we do here, let it glorify you. Thank you for all the many blessings. Keep us safe from harm and evil. And let us come to some great decisions. In your name, amen.
Amen. Mr. Newman, could you lead us the pledge?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
All. Good morning, everybody, and I appreciate you being here. We requested to have some additional time to talk about the items that will be on the agenda on Wednesday. I think it makes sense to kind of break this up into three different pieces. One, discussion of existing proposals. So if anybody's got any additional questions, comments, et cetera, in regard to the additional proposals, we will go ahead and have those. Now, as a reference point, Ms. Koop spent some time with me middle of last week, and I've asked Mr. Perkins to include a suggestion that she made, that Ms. Margolin and Ms. Hunt made, that on the issues regarding the campaign donations and the additional seconds, that also encompass elements like historic tax credits, tax abatements, those sorts of things. Ms. Koop explained, and I think rightfully so, that those should be part of what we're trying to do. So I've asked Mr. Perkins to include those. He's got the first piece of those done. The second piece, however, is trying to identify appropriate triggers on the campaign donations. So he's still working on that, but he can expand a little bit more on that. So that'll be the first piece if there's additional proposals. Then I am very appreciative. There are a number of council people who have made additional suggestions, amendments, those sorts of things, and that's exactly what we want. The idea is to get ideas down on the table. So I've asked Mr. Perkins if he would, to the second part of our session, update us on those amendments that he has. There are some of those that we'll go ahead and discuss now. There are other ones that Mr. Perkins has requested an executive session because there's some legal issues that go into some of those, and we'll do that. And then the third part of it, to the extent there's any other amendments that haven't been submitted at this point, but anybody wants to throw some additional ideas on, then we'll go ahead and do that. So with that, Mr. Perkins, if I could turn to you, if you would just lead a discussion. Again, anything else that we didn't catch the last time in terms of the basic proposals that are out there, as I mentioned, they will be expanded now to include the additional pieces that we talked about. Then anybody want to comment on those, or do you want to move on to that second piece, which is discussion of the amendments that have been submitted to this point? The proposals that are on the table, that we had the briefing on, that we've had the couple of briefings on to this point. Last time, yes.
Yeah.
Is there anything additional to follow on that, or do you want to go ahead and move to the new amendments that have been made? Anything else? Okay. With that, Mr. Perkins, if you could kind of go through the additional amendments and ideas that we've received and kind of give us a background on those.
We'll start with motions to approve zoning cases. One of the issues that has been raised is some effort to limit the universe of cases in which multiple seconds will be required in order to have a vote on a matter. That's been expressed by several council members. How do we find a way to do that? So what we would be proposing is limit the vote to significant zoning cases, and we'll have to get language to members of the council. But we've worked with Development Services and the zoning lawyers to limit significant zoning cases to those where an application has been submitted for incentives, abatements, or other public subsidies in any form. So that would mean if there are TIF increments, tax abatement, housing credits, any of those kinds of matters that are need zoning, but they involve some public subsidy, those would require multiple seconds. Or where the zoning matter involves 25 acres or more in size, or 100,000 square feet or more of floor area would be involved. Or lastly, where a city staff recommendation and city plan commission recommendation differ. If they do not agree, then those four categories of cases would require multiple seconds. If they don't fit within one of those categories, then multiple seconds would not be required. All right, that's one. Have also been proposed amendments Ms. Koop and Ms. Margolin have suggested several changes, and I think those matters were distributed to the council this weekend. Do you want to explain your proposed amendments to the council, council members? Ms. Koop and Ms. Margolin.
Does everybody have a copy? Okay, well, why don't we pass those out so everybody's got it in front of us as Ms. Koop and Ms. Margolin go through it.
Well, we delivered it and we emailed it. Who needs a copy?
You two have them? Do you have them?
Well, we also delivered it to everybody. Okay.
Sure. All right. I'll start.
Why don't I take the first one?
Sure.
Because I think I have a little bit of context to put that in. If you look down towards proposed amendment, no one who is in the process of actively bidding on a contract or responding to a request for bid may lobby a council member from the time of the advertisement for the public notification or request for bid until after the award of contract. And the exception is for appearing at a council meeting. This came up, and it's sort of a little bit of a glitch from many years ago. There was in the procurement reg a regulation that you are not to lobby council members during the bid process. This is for a bid, not the request for proposal and that kind of, for a hard bid. Then in 1999, I had the staff go back and do a little bit of research on it. 1999, for some reason, the council passed a resolution that overturned that procurement reg. And actually, when I asked Tom's staff, we really couldn't quite figure out if it had been. We saw the resolution, but when was the actual vote, we didn't have enough time to research that. But when I first came on council, our class first came on council, it happened a couple of times. I think it may have happened with the red light camera, if I recall, where they opened the bid, or even before the bid, and there was just intense lobbying going on that bid. And when you put out something that's actually a hard bid, those people that are out lobbying really should come to the council in a public forum if they've got a complaint. Now, there are different regulations where the bidder can go to staff, and they've got a whole set of regulations. But if they still got a problem after that, they really should come to council at open mic and tell us what the problem is rather than lobbying us individually. This is really the way they do it at DART and all the other public governmental agencies. And so it was just a little bit of a glitch that I saw a couple of times when I first came on council. I think it needs to be reaffirmed. I don't know that it needs necessarily to be in this new set of regulations. It probably could still be applicable and apply and be put into the procurement regs like it was before, but we as council need to affirm that. In my opinion, it is something that when it's a hard bid, you should not have people lobbying you on a hard bid. That's the idea behind a hard bid.
John, how would you suggest handling it?
Well, we'd be prepared to draft something that if you all, I don't know if it would be a change to the regs or an amendment to...
Yes, change the procurement regs. I don't know that Gwen and
we
I...
We can
Gwen
make it as a general condition to the bid from now on.
Right.
It specifically states that there can be no contact with a council member under the circumstances that you've outlined.
Right. Remember, it's only when there's a closed bid like that. Only when there's a hard bid. You should not be lobbying council members.
Or the city officials.
Well, actually, you should be right. And, city officials, and there is one for the city officials.
Well, every bidder receives a sheet that one of the rules on it says you don't talk to any of us. And we don't.
Council and
yes, but they don't mind that.
But
they don't mind it. We say no. If somebody comes to us, we say no. But since y'all don't know what's going out, sometimes they get into you. So
it sounds like the reaffirmation is going to be important.
Right. So if some way we can reaffirm that
and I'll propose,
make sure all council members know that, I think it really is important. It gives the bidders a false sense of entitlement to come and lobby.
And Ms. Coop, we will recommend to you the best vehicle for ensuring that's a city process and administrative flow.
Okay, thank you.
The first proposed amendment deals with the definition of who has to register. And when we were thinking about it, we came to the conclusion that it really has more to do with the intent to influence than whether they're paid or not paid. And so we tried to line this up with basically the definition that we're looking for on a significant zoning case, so that if somebody, whether they're paid or unpaid, has to register if they plan to have contact with a council member or city official with the intent to influence matters related to significant pending zoning applications, tax credit, historic credits, etc. And so it exempts neighborhood associations, but it basically loses the distinction between the $200 a quarter and just says, if you're going to lobby us, the public has a right to know about it. So it expands the definition.
So, Ms. Margolin, anyone who contacts a city official?
Oh, for these matters, for the matters stated here. Not for anything.
Oh, okay.
For these particular matters.
For these particular matters. Would be required to register.
Yes. I mean, the idea is if you have a lobbyist who is contacting us on behalf of an applicant, what difference does it make to the public that it's the lobbyist contacting us to try to get tax credits or the applicant trying to get tax credits? I mean, if we want the public to have that information, then it seems to us that that either party ought to be registering. So that's what we're proposing.
Okay, and maybe it's best to take these individually. The only thing I'd ask is if we do them individually, let's keep our comments or our questions really concise on this. Would anybody like to comment on that? Mr. Cadane, please.
Does this mean that we're kind of like the Board of Adjustments then? People can't come to us about anything as long as it's zoning?
They can come. They just have to register.
Right. I thought you said they could not come to you.
No, must register as lobbyists.
So anybody has to register as a lobbyist.
If they are dealing with matters related to significant pending zoning applications, tax credit,
Even if they come to just say, we've got a zoning case coming up, wanted to bring it before you, before it even comes up, to see what you thought of it. So,
no.
Does it have to go before CPC? Then this happens.
Well, that's a good question.
I don't know. I'm just wondering.
I think one of the challenges we want to be careful in all these is kind of unintended consequences.
I think we would have probably have handled it just the same as the zoning case when we have the regulations for the zoning cases and the registration of lobbyists, and there's a trigger point. I think you talked about that before we started, you know, what the trigger point might be.
Well, if you go to the bottom of this same page under campaign contributions, it says from the time a zoning case is filed or a public hearing is called by the plan commission or the council until 60 days. Well, it doesn't matter, it's 60 days, then it's just until it's decided.
And that call for the public hearing is a different, you know, it's not the call public hearing in the zoning case. It's when the council members or the plan commissioners call for a public hearing using their five signatures. There's a difference in that, so...
So they wouldn't have to sign up as lobbyists if they came prior to that.
No.
One of the challenges that we have on this is the way that at least talking about the campaign contribution, we can do it the same, we can do it differently. But that is triggered when it goes out that the city council is going to hear it. If we do either the plan commission or the city council, that takes it and pushes it much further out time frame wise. Because there's a lot of issues that could be 8 to 10 months or longer, absolutely, in the plan commission. So on, at least, and again, we can do it differently, but on the campaign contributions, it was trying to identify a trigger of when it comes to the council. And unless the council member defers it, that's usually that 30 to 60 day time frame, which was the trigger.
But this isn't telling them not to talk to us. It's telling them to register.
And what we'd have to do is give you some recommendations. We'd have to get together with the manager's office and see what are the procedural steps associated with each one of these different kinds of vehicles, and how do we come up with a trigger that at that point a contact requires registration. And we'd have to have a recommendation to accompany this kind of requirement.
Well, you said, and neighborhood associations are not involved. They're out. Well, what if it's another group? What if it's a chamber of commerce group that comes to talk to you about a zoning case? I'm just asking that question. If they come to you as a group, who registers or do they have to register?
Yeah, I think in the pieces going, when they're paid, that's easily distinguishable. I think we'll have this challenge in other ones. When they're paid, it's easily distinguishable. When we get into the unpaid, then we run the risk of the person who walks by in the hall and doesn't like something and that. So we've got to be careful that we define this well enough that people can understand, so that people aren't inadvertently disobeying the law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else for Ann on that one? Please. Ms. Hunt, and then Ms. Hossa, and Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had an amendment very similar to this, and I'd like to go ahead and address it now since it seems pertinent. I think one of the ways we can address your concern, Mr. Mayor, regarding what universe of people we're addressing, it seems to me if we're trying to prevent corruption, because that's what this is about. It's trying to prevent corruption. We want to define that group of people that is most likely to either be extorted by a corrupt city official, or who has such an interest in a matter that we're deciding that they may attempt to bribe a city official. I mean, that's really what we're trying to get at. And it seems to me in that case, it is someone who has a financial stake, a significant financial stake in these matters. It's not just someone walking by you in the hall who happens to mention this case, an upcoming important zoning case, and says, Ann, I hope you hope you support this. I think it'll be great for downtown. That, to me, is not enough for someone to have to register. It's an applicant. It is someone who's applied for the TIF, someone who's applied for a tax abatement, because I think Sheffy's exactly right. When chambers of commerce come and they may lobby and support a large-scale development, it doesn't make sense to me that they have to lobby. They're not going to come to us and suggest anything corrupt in our making a decision. There's no economic interest for them to do that. It's the people who have a direct economic benefit or stand to gain something that a possibility exists.
If you say applicant, I think that's clearly understood and definable. I think the challenge, though, and even the example that you gave with the Chamber of Commerce, is they may very well have a financial interest in it. Their members may have an interest on the other side of it, that if it doesn't get zoned, that's to the benefit of the people. And I can raise a case that we saw about a year ago, which would be exactly that same situation, where people didn't want the zoning because they thought if the zoning went forward, it would hurt their business. So I think that's the only thing that we've got to get our arms around, is financial stakeholder can be an awful lot of people, either on a direct or an indirect basis.
Well, I think in that case, then the idea of applicant makes a lot more sense.
That's at least definable. That's what I'm trying to
say. It does. And I think an applicant, and that includes their employees, that includes paid lobbyists of theirs, because we need to focus this so that we're getting to the heart of the matter.
And I think that's all I was trying to say, applicant is definable.
And I think that's right. I agree that this is exactly the type of reform that helps address the issue that we're trying to in this type of regulation.
Let's keep that comment kind of in front of us then, because that may be a modification of some of the things that earlier came out. That's exactly why we're doing this.
All
so
right.
Tom, if you'll kind of keep that kind of at the forefront, and then we'll go through some of these other ones too. Ms. Hossel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I think I have a concern with the first paragraph on the lobby registration, if we're still talking about lobby registration. Significant pending zoning applications. I really would like to see if we could clarify that or quantify it.
Let me ask, because Mr. Perkins actually touched on that in the context of those two pieces I had put in front.
Right.
Mr. Perkins, could you go ahead and read those again? And maybe the great thing would be to get us a copy in the next couple of minutes of that. Because Ms. Hossel, that was exactly what it was intended to do, is try to identify those. And again, that's intended to be a proposal that focuses on what at least was a litmus test of saying the most significant, but also to ensure that there was a large enough number that it was meaningful, that when we get together on a Wednesday, we would see enough of these, that it wasn't some exception that we never see, that it was meaningful in terms of numbers. And basically what I did is I pushed that to Mr. Perkins and the city manager staff to say, craft that in ways that would come up with both the most meaningful, but also in numbers that were large enough that we were dealing with at the council level.
And I'll make copies of this. I'll read it quickly, and then I'll circulate it. But what it requires, it defines what a significant zoning case is. And there are four elements where it involves some city incentives, abatements, or other public subsidies, so that captures tax incentives, TIF districts, where there's some public subsidy associated with a zoning case, that it is 25 acres or more in size, or 100,000 square feet or more, so that it captures big projects. And the fourth is where a city staff recommendation and city plan commission recommendation differ. So in those four areas, that would be the limits of the significant zoning cases that would require multiple seconds.
And I'll get to that. Was aimed at a different thing, but if it works on other pieces, to have that same definition would be helpful, I think, if we're in agreement with that definition. Again, we can modify that however we want to. That occurs later in the process.
So you can't necessarily apply that like you just thought you could.
Well, no, I mean, you're going to apply what you can apply it.
Oh, okay. I just want us to make sure we don't hang ourselves in trying to be... Okay.
No, and that's the unintended consequence. I think that's appropriate, Mr. Newman. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Newman and then Mr. Nadinsky.
Are our comments right now specific to Ann and Linda's first portion? Okay.
Yeah, but why don't you take it? I think we've kind of touched, Ms. Margolin, on really all three on the first page of yours. So let's have the comments on that first page.
Well, I think they did a good job of getting consensus of the feedback that we had last week. I'm supportive of where they're headed. I do think it should be paid and unpaid. If we're going to have disclosure, let's have complete disclosure. I think there's the blurry line. I didn't like this 5% rule thing that we talked about before. So I assume if we adopted this, the 5% is eliminated, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Eliminate this $200 expenditure or compensation criteria also? That's the trigger. That's eliminated, right? It's all paid and unpaid.
Okay. Yes.
But Ann and Linda, it says the listed exceptions and proposed ordinance would remain. Which listed exceptions?
Well,
I'm trying to go back to that. I didn't know if you were referring to the which
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's on page 6 of the original.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Exceptions to the registration: media outlets, people whose only lobbying activity
to
encourage or solicit the members, employees, or owners of an entity by whom the person is compensated to communicate with city officials to influence municipal questions, a governmental entity, a person who neither knows nor has a reason to know that the municipal question has been called, an attorney or other person who may make contact. I think it's pretty well defined. A client who would be required to register only because of an expenditure to compensate a registrant, and an individual who engages in lobbying but neither receives compensation or expends money for lobbying. Now, that goes to the question, kind of what Ms. Hunt said. This last exception, an individual who engages in lobbying but neither receives compensation nor expends money for lobbying, kind of goes to her question as to the applicant and who is defining the applicant. My opinion, that exception of the in this registration should be eliminated, because you may have a person who works for a company who is just paid on a normal basis, perhaps not to lobby, you know, then getting engaged and so on and so forth. So
I think if we take applicant, that is definable and can be put in there
relatively
straightforward, because that would have everything associated with them, employees, et cetera.
Can I mention one thing about applicant, though? The only problem with that, and I talked to one of our attorneys, Ms. Palomino, in zoning cases, it's not just the applicant who has a very significant financial stake in a large zoning case. You have the owner of the property who may not actually be the applicant, because unless the zoning goes through, there won't actually be a sale. And you may have the property purchaser who may or may not be the applicant. So you may have, I think between now and as we draft this, we need to really think about that in the context of zoning cases. The other cases, I think it's easy. You've got TIF abatements, applicants for that.
Applicants.
That's easy. But let's think a little bit more about zoning.
Angela, then differentiate between individuals and applicants. Is that what you're saying?
No.
All-encompassing or narrow?
You have several parties in zoning cases other than just the applicant, who may be a developer who's interested in.
Well, then wouldn't the word individuals be more all-encompassing?
No. No, I don't.
I gotta
check.
I think probably applicant, any property owners, and any future property or anybody that have it under contract. I think it'd probably be the distinction.
Yeah, I think the owner or someone who has it.
Now that again, you can handle the financial stakeholder. I'm afraid that gets so broad that.
And that's fine. I just think we wanted to find in zoning there are a few more parties.
Right. And again, we're almost trying to give Mr. Perkins some direction here. We're not trying to agree on all these. We'll vote on those on Wednesday.
I will endeavor to talk with all of you once I get the direction to make sure that what we draft is consistent with what you want.
Does that help, Mr. Newman?
A little bit. Okay, so I'll continue on my question. So I like the direction Ann and Linda have gone on this. This implies, Linda and Ann, that it's strictly the lobbyist registration, strictly to zoning cases.
It says
if they plan to have contact with the intent implementers or signature zoning.
Think of it as an addition.
How, oh, so it's an addition or replacement of it? I hear you.
Can I just say, the tax abatements, the TIF thing, the tax credits are really typically separate from the zoning case. Those things go through committee. They're typically not, although they're sometimes combined, when you think about what the ones that we have done. I'll take the housing tax credits as an example.
But I think to Mr. Newman's point, think of this as an addition of an additional party that would have to register.
Yes.
In other words, on cases like this, if you fell into that, it would be an addition to what we were talking about.
All right, well,
fact, I go, again, they're separated from the zoning case in most cases.
Well, I'm taking the step of the council a year ago passed new lead standards for commercial buildings over 50,000 square feet. And we said 80% of silver, I think, is our standard with some other points. How would this apply to that?
I don't think it works.
So therefore, those individuals in the private sector that wanted to communicate to the council member or council members or mayor or staff in that scenario would or would not have to register as a lobby?
If they were the applicant, if they were the property owner,
so again, what I'm trying to go to is what we're, again, I'm trying to clarify.
No, that's fine.
What we're trying to go to here is strictly for those situations that are zoning applications, tax credits. I mean, lobbyist registration is strictly zoning applications, tax credits, historic credits, tax abatements, or TIF funds.
If I understand Ms. Margolin and Ms. Coop right, they would,
not in addition to mayor.
They would expand who has to register, the lobbyist registration, to include these people that we just talked about on these sorts of cases.
So expansion. Expand from where?
From just zoning. In the original one. The original one, it only referred to zoning.
The lobbyist registration did.
Well, there's a confusion here. Go back to my example. My example is the council year and a half ago had a public hearing. We talked about commercial properties in the private sector. We're not talking about city. The city already adopted a lead standard for city business buildings, and that's great. We engaged the public in saying what sort of lead standards, sustainable business development, do we want? And in that scenario where we're engaging the private sector on their private property, and we created a new standard for buildings over 50,000 square feet, in that process, would this lobbyist registration apply or not?
No.
I didn't think so. Mayor, you thinking it does?
No,
it does not.
Because it's not a specific case. A specific case of a tax credit.
We have lobbyist registration if there is compensation or expenditure over $200. We would also require registration for someone, regardless of whether there is compensation or expenditure, if they are dealing with tax credits, historic credits, tax abatements, TIF funds.
This is an additional piece onto the lobbyist registration. This, if I understand where you are, this is intending to register under the lobbyist registration. This is an additional piece.
Well,
that would say these people associated with this case also have to register.
Well, if that's the case, does the screwy 5% thing still apply or not? Because it is screwy. That 5% of your job responsibilities. That's screwy. Because every CEO of any company, they spend more than 5% of their time in trying to influence decision makers in their community. So I don't agree with this 5% thing. If that's what we're interpreting as mayor,
I'm saying it's an addition to. I'm not saying.
Well, then I can't support something that has that 5% up to 5%.
Okay.
But I'm still confused as to in addition or replaces there.
I need the direction on is it in addition or does it replace?
They are not mutually inclusive or mutually exclusive,
right?
So it's going to have to be a decision that we make.
Correct.
This can be crafted, as we're talking about, as an additional piece that fits onto it. Then you can deal with the 5% either way the council wants to. It can be in there or it can be out there.
Right.
It doesn't have anything necessarily to do with this. So it's not inclusive or exclusive.
I had originally thought this would replace that, but now that I hear the conversation, and I hear Mr. Newman's comments about I mean, giving the example that somebody could be paid to lobby us on behalf of a generic ordinance that it does not apply to a specific case. So then the question becomes whether we want that sort of lobbyist
right.
to register.
And the answer to the 5% is very straightforward. We can do it or we cannot do it.
Right.
It was intended to take off the individual that doesn't do lobbying, but we may give them a call and ask them a question on a technical aspect like an engineer.
Well, what we call them doesn't apply. It's when they contact us.
It is if they would come back then, Mr. Newman, and say, what you ought to be doing on this is X.
Oh, Mayor.
So when they give the person
we just threw that person under the bus.
But that's what that 5% was designed to do,
right.
is take the one off where somebody is not primarily lobbying, but they're responding, just to make sure that they weren't sucked into this thing.
I have felt the floor. I would say, in all due respect, we're asking for trouble there. That 5% threshold creates an interpretation that some will use and abuse, some will ignore, say, I'm under the 5, I'm over the 5, and you know, I'm a small company CEO, and I spend more than 5% of my time influencing those things that are external to my business. That's a fact. That's just part of being a leader of an organization. You, as mayor, spend more than 5% of your time influencing those external to Dallas. It just happens. So I still have a concern with that. So, back to the original comment. We're just talking about the first page, right?
Let's keep it to the first page. Yeah. But I am going to rush this along a little bit.
Mayor, I'm
conscious of the time.
And, Mayor, I very much appreciate that, but we all need to have the opportunity to comment.
And we will.
Okay. We were just told about this briefing on Friday for today. So I think you're heading in the right direction. I think you're very much right, Linda, that anyone that should not be contacting a city official or a council member for actively bidding on a contract. Absolutely not. And I'm trying to think if anyone ever has in my short 2 years. I don't think so. I would certainly resist someone talking to me if that's underway. So I think that's good to codify that. I think the timetable as it relates to when the campaign contributions should apply or not is something we need to very carefully consider to make sure that we're doing it in a way that is enforceable, that's clear, and it's transparent. And I think I absolutely agree with you that you added or a candidate for a council race. I think that's applicable. And the example for that, Mayor, is very clear. If I was a councilman and ran for re-election and someone gave money to me or couldn't give money to me and gave money to my opponent and I lost in my re-election and that person hit on council, they just got influenced at the time they potentially could vote on that zoning.
And I would ask you to hold comments on that.
But that's
that
the first
is one, excuse me. That is one where the city attorney has specifically requested we would like an executive session.
Okay, well, you said first page.
I'm throwing it in now.
Okay, well, I'm still confused as far as Linda and Ann, which ones of the listed exceptions would remain or not, so we'll have to clarify that further.
And
thank you.
That. Mr. Tipsy, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think the change that's being put on the table is good. My question would be, and I certainly don't want to delay this. I think we need to implement this as quickly as we can, but we need to really seriously think about the day-to-day operational implications of everything that we do. And my concern would be is that are there, and I don't know if we need to talk about it right now, other issues, if we're going to go into this and deal with zoning and deal with incentives and tax credits and those other things, what else out there is of a large enough magnitude that we ought to be able to include that without getting to the point that we're having no contact with anybody because
right.
they may not want to register, and all of a sudden we've created a system that's isolating us from the public. And the transparency works both ways. The more that we put in writing here and the more complicated, if it's not succinct and simple, we're going to have trouble interpreting it. The people who are potentially lobbying us are going to have trouble interpreting it. The public is going to have trouble interpreting it. And what we're going to have is a real mess. So, I think we need to get this in as simple a language and as simple operationally as we possibly can. That's one of the issues over the 5% that Mr. Newman brings up. I mean, who's going to question the 5%? I mean, who's going to be the auditor of all that? And there are other issues like that that are in here that I mean, I don't want to have to every day when I come into the office have my assistant hand me, you know, three or four pages of all the issues that I can or cannot talk that came up that day, and it's so complicated that we can't kind of keep it in the back of our mind rather simply.
And I think that's why other cities really focus on the paid lobbyists, because that was definable, and once we start getting into it, and I think you're absolutely right, we want to be real careful that all of a sudden we don't do two things. One, make it so difficult to do business with the city that nobody wants to and they go other places. And two is that all of a sudden we put it in a situation where there's absolutely no feedback, no input that's coming back to the council on various issues.
I do agree with the amendment piece that Ms. Coop is suggesting regarding purchasing. I think some of us that have been on the council were aware of that. Others, you know, may or may not. I don't know that it was ever clearly given to us in instructions. So I just think we need to be careful about, you know, kind of writing something from the podium that when we get a month or 2 months down the road, we find out that it really wasn't. From my perspective, you know, ethics and morality and all that resides with us, each of us personally. So we ought to be able to determine that and deal with it without having to have a big book of rules. But we're where we are, so I guess we're going to start writing a chapter of rules to be able to govern us. Thank you, Mr. Motor.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, please.
I agree with Ron, you know, about keeping it as simple as possible. You know, it's all about transparency, about being able to keep everything out in the open, know where we, you know, who's lobbying us, who we're talking to. As councilmen, you know, we want everybody's opinion. We want to hear from both sides so that at the end of the day we can make an informed decision. But at the same time, we want it to be transparent that everybody understands. I also agree with Ron when it comes to the individual responsibility falls right on the head of the councilman. At the end of the day, you cannot legislate ethics to folks. They're either going to follow the rules or they're not. So let's keep it simple. With that being said, would this apply, say, back to the lobbyists? Remember when we had, say, the smoking ordinance and the verified response? Would they have to register for that when they come lobbyists?
If they expend or compensate an excess of $200, that is a municipal question that is up to this council, and yes, they would have to register.
Yeah. Now, I think I would answer it specifically in regard to these things we're talking about. Clearly, if they were being on the proposals that we were briefed on Wednesday, if they're paid, absolutely, as Mr. Perkins just said, these would not apply because they have to do with zoning cases, so those wouldn't fall into this category. So the answer on that would be no, unless they were being paid. So the American Heart Association, if they're being paid by somebody, then yes. Or if they paid somebody, then that person would be required to register.
Okay. So again, just want to be real clear on some of these other issues, because there's, you know, like towing issues and other issues that we look at that have these financial impacts. If there is a lobbyist that comes and talks to us about these broader issues, this would cover that lobbyist.
If they're being paid.
If they're being paid.
And again, I think that's why when we put this together and then on what we discussed Wednesday and what other cities have done, there's a very clear connotation of being paid. So that takes out the discrepancy of the next door neighbor comes over and yells. Now the next door neighbor may have a financial interest in it, but they're not being paid. They're kind of doing it on their own. So that doesn't get into that fuzzy area.
I like the being paid part. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. With that, I think the second page, Ms. Margolin, I'm going to try to speed a little bit, but you've got two elements here on the top of the page that talk about the candidate and non-candidate. So I'm going to hold that to the executive session. On the 3 seconds, you're moving that to two. That will be a very straightforward amendment that we can deal with. And then the third is the ethics committee and the biannual review. So with that, if you don't mind, I'm just going to kind of hold it. So with that, Mr. Perkins, why don't we go, Ms. Hunt, you had come up with several. If we can kind of move it over to that, what I'm going to try to do is get this to the point where we can have that executive session
probably in the 9-15-ish range. If we
can. And Mr. Mayor,
please,
is it two or three?
My intent on that is to have three, and we can vote on three, we can vote on two. It'll be the will of the council at that point. That would be a relatively simple amendment.
One just addition to that, in my notes here, and we didn't put it in the body of it. I'd like to codify some type of form so that every time that you or a fellow council member or two or three review a case, whether it involves a tax abatement or whatever the zoning case may be of significance, that you actually get the same information as the next council member.
It's what we talked about, the checklist.
Right. If there's a checklist, then that would be great.
Oh, and we work through that. I think that'll be pretty straightforward.
Okay. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Okay. So let me go to Ms. Hunt right now.
Thank you, Mr. Colleagues, I'm looking on this this document. I tried to make it as brief as possible, Dave. That's exactly right. The short form where you have each of these proposed amendments numbered. And we've covered number one with Ann and Linda's proposal. Mine was substantially the same. I'd like to go to number five.
I'm going to interrupt you. One, I think we've got a three-pager. I'm not sure the one that's numbered. Okay. I'm not sure we've all got that copy.
Deborah,
do we?
I think Deborah may have
it. I think Ms. Medrano's got two of them. And the number one is the one.
I think Deborah was passing them out. This is the short form.
Okay, now
Deborah's
now,
passing them out.
Okay, so everybody has the one, and then
no, what? I don't think so. Delia doesn't.
Okay.
Have a copy.
So it says 1 through 10.
Yes.
On the front. The one that says 1 through 10 on the first page.
Yes.
Got it.
You don't have that one?
Okay, I think everybody has a copy now. I wanted to look at number five because I think that is, to me, one of the most significant aspects of this. Right now, the proposal that's on our before us simply has lobbyists or applicants, as we're proposing now, filling out a form that lists who they met with the last 3 months on an issue. Well, I would argue that is not enough information for the public to have any context of the relationship between that lobbyist and that city official, because that's very much like, colleagues, when we have financial campaign contribution disclosures, if we were simply to list out all the people who gave us campaign contributions, we didn't put the amount of contribution at all. We just list out. And so for someone reviewing that campaign contribution form, there's no context of understanding, well, did that person give Ms. Hunt $5 or $1,000? That's important for the public to know and understand. And in the same way, it's important for the public to know and understand, did a lobbyist simply pick up the phone and talk to a council member for a couple of minutes? Or did they visit with that council member twice a week at the golf course over the course of 3 months as they lobbied on a zoning case? So there is a substantive difference there, and if we're trying to get at corruption, to me it seems that we want to give the public as much transparency and information as possible. And you don't get that information under the current proposal because, frankly, I think a lot of lobbyists, if they're smart, would simply shoot a quick email to every single council member about a case. They'll shoot an email to Linda and Dave and Ron and Sheffy, everybody. But they may lobby Delia twice a week, every week. And yet, when on the form that the public sees, they're going to list Dave and Linda and Ron and Delia the same. And there's no context for that in understanding that, no, Delia was lobbied regularly, systematically, And where did they meet? Were they meeting at City Hall, or were they going to an expensive lunch every week? So I think that is so important that we have a little bit more information on this form than what has been proposed. So with that, I welcome any comments or questions.
Do you want to talk about any of these others?
I do, Mr. Mayor, but I think it'd be most helpful if there are just any questions on this particular
matter. Okay, comment on that
matter.
Mr. Tipke, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is the burden of all this being placed on the lobbyists potentially?
Yes.
Okay. My question would be, is there any implied duty on the part of the city council member? In other words, at some point down the road, is someone going to question, well, the lobbyist says he was only there for 5 minutes, and some citizen says, well, I think they had an hour meeting, or they went here or they went there. In other words, what implied responsibility then comes back to the council member to be able to either validate or corroborate this? Because I personally don't want to get, at least for myself, in a position of having to be the checklist of whether a lobbyist reported correctly or didn't report correctly.
And your point's well taken. I think you'd be in the same situation if, for example, a lobbyist wrote down your name and said, I did speak to Ron Nitinsky about this matter, and you can't recall ever having spoken to this lobbyist on
this. That's a pretty simple yes or no. I either remember or I don't. But for me to then, I'll just tell you, if I had to keep all this stuff, my daily calendar would get overwhelmed with data that I'm keeping on the chance that one day someone is going to question or want to know that, in fact, a lobbyist. I just see that as putting a lot of burden on everybody to get down to the length of the meeting or whatever. As far as the comment with regard to the differentiation, whether they took me to an expensive lunch or they didn't, number one, nobody takes me to lunch anyway, but if they did, that's going to show up on the financial expenditures that I think are still part of this. In other words, if the lobbyist, one of the next items we're going to get to, I guess, if anybody spends more than $25 in a quarter on any council member, it's going to get picked up. And that's going to happen. My understanding was that's going to require a date and time of where they went. So in a way, that's kind of the backdoor way to anything that has any significant value. My comments only.
Appreciate it. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Responding to number five, if an individual wanted to take me out to eat, I could pay for my own meal. Am I right?
I'm sorry, Ms. Davis.
On number five, if an individual wanted to take, a lobbyist wanted to take me out to eat, I could pay for my own meal, right?
Absolutely.
Would that lobbyist still have to report that?
They have to report that they had a meeting with you, yes. The
okay.
way it's written currently, would have to report that they had, that lobbied you.
But if it was not about any type of business, and if it's just a person who come up here and just do work who is a lobbyist, but we didn't discuss anything about a particular case.
You didn't discuss the issue, no.
Okay. The same thing. You have the name, you have the date, you have the length of the meet, you have the location of the meet, and you have the attendance. I think that is enough information that lobbyists need to put in that particular category on that piece of paper, talking about everything that he or she talked to a council member about. The other thing is that I also believe if we start putting too much into all of this, quote unquote, so that we would not have corruption. Mella, how many corruption cases have we had here in the city of Dallas when it comes to council members?
I don't know. There, I guess, three prosecutions that have occurred over the last, 10 years.
Okay, so now remember, this is over the last...
I don't know when...
Well, I need to know. How many corruption cases have we had when it came to council members? Two that I remember.
Well, I think there's three.
Okay, it's either two or three. Over a period of how many years?
I'm just
getting into this because we continue to quote unquote talk about corruption, and when you talk about three over the last 25 or 30 years, I think that's it's not saying it's perfect. No one should have done what they've done, but I don't want this meeting to be about strictly corruption. I want this meeting to be about, this is what we're supposed to do here in the city of Dallas. So if I'm sitting here because, quote unquote, some corruption happened, then I think we're here for the wrong reason. The other thing is, on this documentation on five, what is the difference between a lobbyist and someone who works in government affairs?
Well, under currently written on the proposal, if they're paid, they're lobbyists.
Okay.
If they're not paid, they're not. So.
So if you have someone who works in a governmental affairs, and they come down here, and they're not considered as a lobbyist, quote unquote, and there are some of the big companies that have that title, and I know some individuals who have come down here, but they're not considered as lobbyists. Would they have to fill out the same form?
If they're being compensated in excess of
$200? No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that they're being compensated. If they work for governmental affairs, and I know three or four people that come down here, and they're big companies, they're getting paid by the company, quote unquote. They're not lobbyists, but they are talking about certain issues. Then do they still fill out this form?
It doesn't matter what the company calls them.
Okay.
If they spend, you know, we've talked about this 5% rule, and you all can accept it or reject it. But at this point, if they are classified as a governmental relations person, but they don't come down here and lobby you guys or the council members on a municipal question, then they don't have to lobby regardless of what they're called. Now, if they come down and they spend more than 5% of their time, regardless of what they call it, lobbying, then they have to register.
Okay.
Anything else on number five specifically?
No, I've said that, you know, I could, you know, the date, the name, the date, the length of the meeting, the location of the meeting, and the attendance. I think this is enough.
Okay.
For the lobby.
I'm going to go back to Ms. Hunt for the next. Ms. Margolin, please.
Oh, just a quick response to the concern that Mr. Natinsky expressed on it being a burden to us. I mean, my calendar has who I'm meeting with and where I'm meeting with them, and so that would be my guide. I mean, I think we're pretty much doing that anyway, so I don't think it's going to add anything to what I do. If someone comes back and questions who I met with and where and what time, it's there on my calendar.
I'm going to go to you. I would have a concern that's similar to what Mr. Natinsky said, and that is once we start getting all of this information, the paper component of it becomes very difficult. If it is something where there's an expenditure made, out to lunch, taking to a game, whatever it may be, that's shown, and it's shown in detail already under the expenditures. But if you just have meetings, keep in mind what you're going to deal with if somebody sees you in the hall, who you were with. This is going to be a lot of paperwork for people to do, and at some point it's going to get so burdensome that, again, you're not going to get the input, you're not going to get the visibility that we want. I think the goal originally was to make sure that you identified who was being lobbied and showed that. But starting to put this sort of detail, when you go through it, it is going to end up being an awful lot of work for those people that were trying to get filed and trying to do it in the right way. Keep in mind, if you miss these, that hall meeting very well could be in here. That could be $500.
Well, Mr. Mayor, the only problem with that is if someone comes to you on a major zoning case and they only meet with you exclusively, then they decide they don't want to simply list Tom Leppard on this list.
They would have to list Tom Leppard.
I understand. They don't want to simply and only list your name because that would indicate that they were exclusively meeting with you. And so they send out a quick email to every other council member so they can write down 14 more names. How does that provide the public with any transparency as to what the actual relationship is between that lobbyist and city officials? It doesn't. At all. It gives you absolutely no context for understanding which city official is truly being lobbied. I mean, the system that you're proposing will be gamed so easily, I don't understand why we're bothering. Because truly, under this system, if someone sends out a two-second email and says, Dave, will you please vote for this? Thanks. That's a contact, and they have to write you down just as much as if they met with the mayor every day for a month. How does that provide transparency, Mr. Mayor? How does that prevent corruption?
Okay, why don't you go on your next one?
I think there is
visibility there. I think we've got to be very careful because
it's to list everybody that's going to help.
The logical next step on this is literally to record every meeting. We could ask people to record every meeting. But we're getting to the point now where you're throwing so much on it that it's going to gut it. That all of a sudden we are just inviting violation after violation.
But help me understand how it's going to help me understand how it will illuminate any possible corruption that's happening if someone sends out an email to every single one of us and they meet with you every day for a month. How does that illuminate?
First of all, once it's identified, then you have open records. So my schedule's available. All of your schedules are available. Anybody's welcome to go get those schedules at that point in time.
And what it was,
so all of this information is already available. But by starting to do this, again, we get it by simply having the paper kill the camel.
Ms. Watkins, I think you sent out in the last few months information about how often our emails would be destroyed, how often certain records would be destroyed, and
yes.
I recall 90 days being
yes.
the time.
Yes.
Mr. Mayor, if we are deleting and destroying records after 90 days, there's not going to be any open records to provide to the public because they're going to be eliminated. They're going to be gone under this system. You don't have to disclose but once a quarter. So I disclose my contacts at the 90-day mark, and guess what? Those emails are gone.
So there
are not going to be open records available.
Than it is to make people put in that they saw people in halls.
Those open records won't be available.
All those sorts of things.
Well,
I mean, the logistics on this, I think, become unworkable. I think it guts what we're trying to do.
I think what guts what we're trying to do is if we don't create a system that actually will prevent corruption. And just having a list of names, Mr. Mayor, does not in any way eliminate
to the
public.
I think both of the arguments are out there. Why don't you move on to the next one?
I'm going to mention number two, prohibiting gifts from lobbyists and financial stakeholders. That would be applicants, people who have an interest in zoning cases or TIF abatements. We don't need to be accepting gifts from these folks, no matter what the amount is. And number three, prohibiting a lobbyist or financial stakeholder from giving money or goods to any business that a city official has an economic interest in. I think under the current proposal, Tom, it's simply some disclosure of the fact that there's that the lobbyist is giving money or goods to a business that they know a city official has a stake in. Is that right?
That's correct.
It's just a disclosure.
If the exchange is in excess of $250, there is a disclosure requirement.
I mean, colleagues, we should not have applicants to these cases doing business with city officials on the side. I mean, that just looks bad, and that I think that just sets the stage for corruption. So, I'd like to see us look at monthly rather than quarterly disclosure forms. And Mr. Mayor, if it's going to be as simple as just listing out the people with whom the lobbyists met, I don't think it would be overly burdensome for them to provide a list on a monthly basis if that's the only information they're going to provide. Number seven, Mr. Mayor, are you, I think I saw something over the weekend that you were proposing something similar to this, a flat annual fee rather than a graduated fee.
I'm comfortable with a number of different things, so it's not an issue.
Well,
what would be on the table, and again, we can do anything we want, is one that would say there is an annual fee, and you identify however many clients fall into that. So when you file, you could have 100 clients or one. As you add clients, there would be a relatively small addition to
that. $20.
$25.
So relatively small.
And that's fine. And that's what I would propose here. Number 8, requiring registrants to disclose only the following in relation to lobbying on a pending matter. And frankly, I think what is proposed is much more onerous than listing names and dates and lengths of meetings. I think requiring the disclosure by lobbyists of how much they're spending on office supplies, again, how does that prevent corruption? I don't mean that as a rhetorical question. Truly, in the current proposal, there is a requirement of disclosure to, and I can flip to the page, to indicate how much was expended on advertising, office supplies.
The office supplies.
That
was an original briefing. It's not in the...
On the Wednesday briefing. It wasn't on the document that we're discussing today. And let me say, I think that is one of the challenges we've got. We're rushing this, and I feel very strongly that we need to strengthen this. Others of my colleagues have had, I think, very good ideas. I question whether our attorneys working night and day can craft an ordinance that is thoughtful and contains everything we're talking about, and whether we will have time to review it prior to Wednesday. When do you think that, given all the information you've gotten, Mr. Perkins, you're going to be able to provide us with an ordinance? Is it going to be this afternoon?
No, it will not be this afternoon.
Will it be tomorrow morning? Probably not.
We're going to work as hard as we can to get it out as quickly as we can.
I understand, and I appreciate that, but I don't think it's reasonable for us to expect that we will have an opportunity to really vet and review this ordinance thoughtfully prior to the vote on Wednesday. And I'm not understanding why we don't want to craft this thoughtfully. This is an important issue. Why would we want to rush into it on Wednesday when we had so many thoughtful comments today that I think will improve this ordinance? Why, Mr. Mayor, are you expecting him to have a draft to us early enough for us to thoughtfully review it?
Well, now, again, as we did in a number of other situations, when people put amendments, they could put the amendments in, and then the attorney can basically put the wording to it on a later basis.
So we will,
if we've got
we,
the amendment.
Well,
now, so in effect on this, we're actually much further ahead than we were on some of the smoking amendments or other things like that that we dealt with.
We're not going to have the document in front of us then, is what you're saying. We're not going to have the legal language we're voting on.
I don't know. You may have some of it. I don't know.
Well, it really depends on what changes you tell me you want today. That was the purpose.
Now, you've drafted...
I have drafted some language...
Based on the memos from Ms. Margolin, Ms. Koop, and the ones from Ms. Hunt.
No, we've done...
Ms. Hunt.
Right. We've done
and
the mayors on...
And Ms. Hill.
And Ms. Hill.
Yeah.
I have not done Ms. Margolin and Ms. Koop at this point.
At their request.
Yes.
All right. Going to number 9, this is moot at this point, because if we're not going to have monthly disclosure and if we're not going to provide more information about meetings that happen between city officials and lobbyists, I don't know that number 9 makes sense. It's eliminating the requirement for lobbyists to disclose emails or other written communications to city officials, because if this were on a monthly time frame, people would have the opportunity to seek open records if they wanted any information about emails that went back and forth between city officials and lobbyists. It wouldn't make sense to me under my proposal to require you to write down every time an email was exchanged with a city official, and I'm not sure, again, how that gets to the heart of preventing corruption at City Hall.
Ms. Margot?
In light of what you said earlier, I think it makes sense to eliminate that as a requirement. As a matter of fact, to specifically prohibit it as a requirement because of the loophole that you brought up, so that somebody can't send emails to everyone and then say that they contacted everyone. And so just take emails out of there completely.
Emails and written communications?
Yeah. Okay. Before, Angela said that if a lobbyist was heavily lobbying you, but then sent one email to everybody. In the quarterly statement, they would say that they had had contact with every council member. But the fact may be that they are only, that person is really only seriously meeting with you because it's a zoning case in your district.
The real easy solution is just to include type of contact.
Type of contact.
Yeah, you put email, you'd be in person. If it's a game or if it's taking out to lunch, that's going to have to be shown on the disclosures anyway.
That's fine.
Okay, that's fine. And
that might be the compromise on this thing, so it doesn't have all the pieces. So we're trying to pull it together, is to put type of contact, because I think that gets at what you're talking about, but at the same time, does it force somebody to put 15 different things that they run
that, that would call. Be fine, and it just the type of contact would be fine.
Okay. This would be for what's called the activity report. Yeah.
And then on number 10, I wasn't clear. I thought in Ms. Coop's and Ms. Margolin's proposal, it excluded this concept of defining a lobbyist in relation to expenditures. Linda, is that right? Or okay, so it's basically you're not concerned about expenditures. That doesn't define the lobbyist, correct? And I agree with that. It doesn't make sense to me that we define a lobbyist as how much they're spending, rather whether or not they're getting any compensation for their work as a lobbyist.
Again, that will be a decision that the council can make. Let me just say that the reason that the 200 was put in there, and it's been done in other cities, is to get the miscellaneous out of the game, so that if somebody, I'll give you the argument, but it comes in. If you come to me and say, I want you to talk to Mr. Allen, and you've given me a lunch of $25, am I a paid lobbyist? So it was trying to eliminate the miscellaneous things off on the side.
Explain that one more time.
What we were trying to do is get the miscellaneous. In other words, have the hurdle. And again, I think $200 when you talk on a quarterly basis, think about it, you're at $70 a month in terms of paid compensation. So it's a pretty low hurdle. But it was trying to eliminate the miscellaneous ones so that if there was $15 or something like that, that didn't come into it. We're really trying to target it on the paid lobbyists and get it at a level that got rid of the miscellaneous. Again, trying to make this as simple and as straightforward to do as we can. Again, that was a decision the council makes. I just want people to understand where the 200, why it came in.
And it's just the expenditures that seems to me superfluous here. That if we simply have, if you're compensated as a lobbyist, you're in the system. If you're not, you're spending money, you take them out.
That will be a decision of the council.
On number 6, I would suggest that we at least on the disclosure forms, these quarterly disclosure forms that we're talking about having, if someone is both working for us as a campaign consultant and lobbying on an issue, the least we can do is note that on a form. Note that on the form that they're both. I don't think that that's too difficult. And I think that we all know when we see lobbyists up here, it's not for us, you guys. It's for the public. And so I think it would be helpful and transparent for the public to understand who is representing us on campaign issues and who is also lobbying on a specific matter that is coming before us to decide. So again, I just suggest that as a disclosure. I don't think that would be too onerous, and I think that would be fairly simple.
It's not a prohibition, it's a disclosure.
It's a disclosure. Just have it as a disclosure.
And I think if I can take it one step further, Tom, if we can just set it up so that it's almost an asterisk. You know, if you show Joe Schmo type of contact and there's an asterisk, that asterisk would reference back to what Ms. Hunt's getting at.
An asterisk for?
In other words, let's say that Mr. Salazar ran Ms. Hasso's campaign. When Mr. Salazar showed on his activity report
that
he made the contact, then he would asterisk and say,
sure.
And that asterisk would denote this.
And that's fine.
I'm simplifying it a little bit, but I'm trying to give Mr. Perkins a little bit of direction.
That's fine.
Ms. Davis, please.
You know what? I think this is a little too much. Now, we're going into the campaign manager.
And again, all we'll do is put this down as an amendment. We will vote on it Wednesday. If we don't like it, then we will eliminate it.
You know,
all I'm trying to do is put this in a way that from a decision-making process of the body of the council, we can decide. If we want to do it, we can do it. If we don't want to do it, then we don't have to do it.
And the other thing is that are we looking at these to be individual items?
I'm looking at these to be amendments to what's on the body. So much as we've done on a number of issues, all the others will deal with individual amendments.
Sure. Okay.
But all I'm trying to do is just wrestle it down so that we know what we're talking about, and it can be a simple and straightforward decision. Include it, don't include it.
Okay.
And then once we do, we'll decide, do we want to do the package in total or not.
Okay, so we'll make that decision whenever, if it's not Wednesday or another day.
It is on the calendar for Wednesday. Again, we can do what we want.
Okay, so we'll make the decision if we're going to package all of this together or if we will have individual amendments.
Well, I'm planning on putting the individual amendments for these pieces, and we'll go through those.
Mm-hmm.
So if an amendment lives through the vote, they will be considered as part of the package.
Okay. When will we get those amendments that has been that we're talking about to be changed, Tom?
What we anticipate doing is probably two things. Tom, as he said, has done a number of these amendments in the form of ordinances. So that will be helpful now. What I would anticipate doing is having a list that we would have on Wednesday morning based on this conversation that would list each one of these amendments. So kind of pulling all of the pieces together and any new amendments that may be. And we'll just literally go right down through them.
And the amendments that we have so far on the table, is Ms. Hunt 2 or 1?
Ms. Hunt has 11, I think.
11 amendments.
And I'm going to go back and try to summarize these
when
we get done.
And then
Ms. Margolin and Ms. Coop have...
Has how many?
I'm saying about 5 or 6, probably. Yeah.
So they have 5 or 6.
Yeah. And then Ms. Hill has 3.
3.
Do we have Ms. Hill's amendment?
We do. We haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. And then we have who else's amendment? And then your amendment.
That's what we have to this point.
Then
we have the basic proposal adopted.
Which is your amendment.
Yeah.
Okay. So right now we have 4 council members' amendment, which includes your amendment, the overall kind of amendment.
Right. And as I said at the beginning of the meeting, we're going through, one, any comments on the proposal we talked about Wednesday. We went through that.
Okay.
Now we're in the second part of this meeting, which is discussing the amendments that have been submitted. The third part will be if anybody wants to put additional amendments down on the table, they'll have that opportunity when we get out.
Okay, so right now, because I want to make sure, because I'm putting my amendments up. So we have 5 amendments with yourself?
4.
4 amendments with yourself. Okay, then. And then on Wednesday, then we'll go through each one of these amendments, and then we can pick up what we want to or what we don't want
to. Yes. Some may live, some may not live.
I understand.
It's going to be the decision of the council.
And some of the amendments may ultimately, depending on what's accepted and what's not, may require...
You may very well have amendments that are in opposition to each other. We're just going to have to decide that. That'll be our choice.
Okay, Mr. Mayor, one last thing. On my last page, this relates to the contribution restrictions, and I think this is very close, if not identical, to what Ms. Margolin and Ms. Coop were suggesting. And it's simply making sure that we're capturing more than just zoning applicants, we're capturing folks who are...
It is very consistent with that. Okay. And then, Ms. Hunt, are you happy then on number 5 if it's showing the type of contact then? Is that a reasonable way to do it?
I don't think it is as inclusive as I would prefer, but I think if that is as much information as we can gain consensus on and people will agree to, then I think it's as much information as we're going to get. But I do think that that at least provides a little more context for
what I'm just trying to work through it.
Yeah.
Can
you just be clear on number 5? What will they...
Well, What I was hearing from the conversation is it might be agreeable to the consensus of the council. We'll find that out on Wednesday. If instead of listing all this, it would list on the activity report the contacts. So we'll say Linda Coop and then the type of contact. In-person meeting, email. Tom Leppert, email. Ron Natisky, lunch. And then that lunch would show up as an X expenditure on the addendum, which would list the expenditures and the details of that, which in that case then would show the time and place.
So it would include email, phone,
I think, again, there's thousands that could be. I think we'll probably narrow it down to written, email, in person, and then expenditure.
And phone.
And phone. I'm sorry, phone too. Yes, please. Okay, with that. Mr. Allen, please. And then what we'll do is we'll go into that executive session on a couple of these.
May I ask one question, Ms. Hunt? The elimination of the prohibition on lobbyists accepting contingency fees, right now, the way it's written,
yes,
that's a disclosure issue. It is not prohibited.
And yes, we'll put an amendment up so it'll be disclosure or prohibition.
Right. The current ordinance allows it with disclosure.
Allows it with disclosure. Okay, I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I just didn't want to prohibit it altogether and get into regulating private business, so I'm fine with that.
Okay, so 11 men we can eliminate because it is disclosed.
Okay.
And I think that's what we were trying to do, is not take the position of we're going to end up with this list of everything you can and can't do, but instead, as I think has been most effective, is really put it back on the citizen. So the citizen understands what's happening. Make it transparent, make it visible.
Mayor, have we reached out to the very community we're about to re-regulate?
Yes. Yes.
Have they been given an opportunity to publicly testify to this council?
I know they've met with Mr. Perkins a number of times.
None have met with me.
And they haven't met with me either.
good point.
I'm
just saying that,
and my guess is
Mayor, I'm just saying that I think as we legislate, and that's part of our job, again, it's transparency, to make sure we give those that we're about to regulate an opportunity to say how they think it would work or would not work, because we, as Mr. Natinsky said, we want to make sure this is something that achieves what we're trying to achieve, not have unintended consequences. So I'm a little concerned that we don't even have a final document. We're not going to get one today, or probably not tomorrow. So we're going to get this midnight rush Tuesday before, and then Tom gets the blame. So, you know, I don't see anything that has to have vote on Wednesday, Mayor, is what I'm saying to you. And there are five council members that asked for additional information. I probably would have signed that memo as well. I just think we want to make sure we do this correctly and succinctly, not in such a rush on Wednesday, this Wednesday versus the next Wednesday.
And that will be a decision of council.
I know, Mayor, but by being on the agenda Wednesday, you're forcing the city attorney to do somersaults, which there are times that we want that, Tom. But we want to make sure this is transparent so we all know the information that's coming to us. Now, this one council member, I've got my notes on this sheet and my notes on this sheet. The mayor, you just gave me a new one. I've got my notes on this one. I've got a notes on this. So I'm in the process of organizing my various versions, but I don't know if I was as good as Ms. Coop in keeping her notes, or as good as Mr. Natinsky, as he's getting his notes, or Ms. Hasso. And so in trying to create the very transparency, we're failing already. Thank you.
Well, you raised two issues. Clearly, anybody that wants to make comments has three different opportunities. Number one is to meet in the drafting of it. Mr. Perkins, and I asked him specifically to reach out to people who are involved in this community, and he indeed has done that. The second option is either the council people can call those individuals they know, or those people can call the council.
But can I speak at the mic on Wednesday?
And that's the second one. And the third one is they're free to speak at the mic. They can sign up very easily to be a speaker on Wednesday. They had that option on last Wednesday, so there's ample opportunity to be able to do that. Now, in terms of where this is and the timing, I want to be real clear. These pieces that are on the table were ones that I talked to most of the council people with 2 years ago and were included in the written memorandum. Several months ago, we had a briefing on that, and that material was made available. That was several months ago. Then we've had another briefing, and this is our third briefing. In terms of the amendments and those pieces, we will be much further ahead than either we were on smoking, verified response, or anything else in terms of identifying those amendments and pushing those and making those available to anybody. So I want to be real clear. This has not been a short process. It has indeed been a long process.
With all due respect, Mayor, the briefing that the council had was an aborted briefing. We met in executive session and made a decision that there were legal issues that prevented the council from moving forward, so we did not have a briefing. The city attorney started the process, and then there was a call by either Ms. Hill or Mr. Atkins to go in executive session. So that was not a briefing.
Right.
And we all knew our counsel. That's right, because we did not feel that there were legal issues present that prevented that briefing. Number two, Mayor, I don't think that this council asked for any feedback at the last briefing on this. I don't remember a public comment session. We certainly could have it now, public feedback. I'm not trying to put anyone on the spot, but I want to make sure I'm all for moving forward and being transparent. Absolutely. I just want to make sure we do it right. Now, I disagree with some of the components that Ms. Hunt has on some of the details, but that's okay. We're headed most in the same direction. But I just want to do this right. I don't think Wednesday is an absolute. That's all I'm conveying. And I get nervous that my 1/15th city attorney is spending inordinate amount of staff time on something that meets the Wednesday deadline when there are other things that are potentially in the hopper. I'm just conveying my concern. Thank you, Mayor.
Fair point. Tom, real quickly, I want to get that executive session. Ms. Hunt, in the second place.
Mr. Mayor, on the comparison to the vetting of our smoking ordinance, I would just remind the mayor and the council that we had a subcommittee that was appointed by the mayor to hold, I think, Ms. Estrano, wasn't that your committee?
Yes, and we had seven meetings.
We had seven meetings of a committee of this council to vet the smoking ordinance. We've had zero meetings by any subcommittee because we don't have a subcommittee created to address this very important ordinance. And so I think it's unfair, Mr. Mayor, to compare that process with this process. This has been quite swift, and I really do worry that we will not have the best drafted ordinance as a result.
Yeah, I just want to be clear. This has been on the table for 2 years now. The first people, the memo was. Mr. Allen, please.
You know, as a general rule, I've never, since been on council, we've always, on major issues, there's never been enough time. Every single one that I've seen has always been where there's not enough time, and it's always being rushed. And this might, in my case, might be an example, because now I'm starting to see us get down in the weeds on this thing, losing common sense on it. What we're trying to do is stay transparent. We're trying to have checks and balances that are out there. We're trying to be able to show in a big, broad way to the citizens of Dallas when a decision is made and show that it was made fairly and honestly. So I might be open now just to go back and see if we can't bring this back up to more of a 5,000, 10,000 foot level, put it back in perspective about what we're trying to accomplish, not trying to make it so difficult to do business in the city of Dallas, but at the same time, making sure that it is transparent. From a corruption standpoint, I've heard that word used over and over by some folks today. We will never, ever stop corruption about people that want to do bad. You can't do it. Can't do it. Those same folks, whatever we put in here, they're going to turn around and get around it without question. So let's just keep this thing from a common sense issue. Let's keep it transparent. Keep it out there.
You're right. We can delay anything. We won't get there. Ms. Kelly?
Thank you, Mayor. And I've heard a lot of comments, and mine will be pretty precise. One, let's remember the stress that we're going to put on the city secretary's office. I want to just say that because at some point we'll be reviewing the city secretary and the city secretary's needs and shortfalls and desires. But I want to say that. So everything that we're doing, all of the things that we're talking about and how we need them to have them and all that little tedious paperwork is going to have to flow somewhere, and it's going to flow on the back of the city secretary's office. I want to say that. As relate to gifts, I want to just make one little point about that. I don't have a problem with us trying to figure out how what we do as relate to gifts, but across the board we need to understand that when we and the park department and other areas, when we go out and we receive T-shirts and plaques certificates and all those things, not just tickets. I want to be able to know how we are planning on trying to keep up with that. Because you go to a church and they decide to honor you on a particular day and they give you a plaque, and you go to another function that afternoon and you're honored and they give you a trophy, and you go somewhere and the next day and you're honored and you are the keynote speaker and you didn't have to pay for the table but you got a steak there that they are providing for the banquet. Now certain things like that can just go too far as related to gifts, because all of that is some form of a gift. If we continue to do what Mr. Allen is saying, that is get way down into the weeds. So, Tom, I want to make sure that you understand that these things are a concern to me, because if we're going to do it, if it's going to apply, then it has to apply across the board. And certain things cannot apply just across the board. So it's going to have to be some type of a level. When we go to the Arboretum, they give us some tickets to go to the Arboretum, and they send us a little packet of them. When we go to the fair, they give us our passes. When we do a bunch of things, when we go to the symphony, we're given things, and so under gifts, I have a concern about that. Now, y'all might think that's small, but that's large as far as I'm concerned. So there's a need to have some type of regulation. Contributions we're going to talk about in executive session. As related to these seconds, Mayor, this is where I am on it. If indeed, and I really am not having a major problem, I was kind of keeping up with a little bit of it on my way here this morning. The tax finance and the TIFs and all of that, I think I expressed, and you all have kind of categorized those separately from just additional zoning cases, so that's good. But I do think that if indeed a case, whatever the nature of the case, has the merit to pass, then it takes 8 votes for it to pass. So theoretically, I'm not having a problem with the seconds, because that means if my case is good, then I got 8 seconds. If I have my 8 votes. So it takes a minimum of that to make it. So I think we're probably putting a lot into it more than trying to come up with the substance of what we are trying to accomplish here. And that is, the public expect for us to make sure that we address concerns and keep the transparency. But I think we're beginning to somewhat dig real deep into some things, because, again, if you got the votes, then you got your seconds. If I have 8 votes, I got 8 seconds instead of 2 or 3. So that's where I am with that. And as it relates to, Tom, you being prepared to have this, I think that you will be prepared. I think that there's still another way for the council to continue to move forward. And that is that when we come Wednesday, Mayor, we will have these things, but then you'll still have to come back with a final draft of the ordinance. You will still have to come back at some point, even though we will pass a pending, a final reading of the draft or whatever the case is. We've done that before. I think we did it with the convention center, hotel, or some other stuff. Whatever it is, you will still have to come back with a final draft from our discussion. So that does not mean, Mayor, that we have to hold it up. We can still move forward.
Well, now, we'll just play out the outcome.
Okay, now last thing I'm going to ask is this. What if a grocery store owner, and someone, Mayor or Tom, you can answer this one. What if a grocery store owner, not a lobbyist, but a gentleman wanting to put a grocery store in, were to come to a council person and express, I want to put a grocery store on X Street and I need your support. Is he considered a lobbyist? Or how do we report that with the contact with the grocery store?
The way it is currently, the proposal is on, he or she would not be required to make any type of form unless they were being paid by somebody else.
Okay.
Now, under what is being proposed, or at least one element of the amendment is, they would not have to until it was something that had been filed. Once it had been filed, if they are the applicant or the owner of the property, then they would have to register if they approached it. As a conceptual piece, under any circumstances, they would not have to, but if it became where it was taking tax money, subsidies, abatements, et cetera, those sorts of things, once it was in effect filed, docketed, then they would have to file.
Okay. And then, just by nod of the head to the three lobbyists that's out there, you all have had input with this, as this process. Am I correct?
Yes.
Willie, Kurt, you all have had input. Your input has been heard as relates to this process as we move forward. You were talking?
Well,
okay. Okay. All right. Well, good. Okay.
Okay. I'm now going to go into executive. Well, we're going to come back. They'll have opportunities, but we've got to go into an executive session to carry this. We'll come back and we'll do it.
Merit, you know, I just got here
and everybody will have the chance by the time we get done. But we need to go into executive session to deal with an issue that has been raised.
And then we'll come back.
And then we will come back.
Okay.
Okay, it's now 9:39 of October 26th. City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act. Receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in today's agenda: legal issues involving campaign contribution restrictions, and hopefully that'll be about 10 minutes. Okay, we're back in session. We have run long, and I apologize both to Mr. Salazar and Mr. Allen. They both have committee meetings. Both those committee meetings... I thought it was housing. I'm sorry, quality of life. I apologize. But quality of life and finance, both of those will take place after we get done. So if anybody's in the audience for those, we'll get onto those just as soon as we can. Any other comments to wrap this up? And then I want to open it up to questions if there's any other amendments, and then we're done. Mr. Atkins, please. And if they want to speak, we'll do that too. They've already been here.
Councilor colleagues, you know, I just got here late. I apologize. I had an 8 o'clock, 7:30 meeting this morning. And my main concern, Mayor and colleagues, that last week I asked for these to be deferred and to be individual consideration, each one. You might say that number one, that no one have came to me and said that we need to make a whole lot of major changes. And if we, as council members, and we feel like that we need to make major changes, we should not be rushing into something like this. I remember last week that on our briefing, we was handing out some forms, information the day of, and the information was ready on Friday. Still warm, you know, so I'm very, very concerned about timely mounting. I did ask for to defer this, Marilyn, so everybody can bend it out. I think she went to go to the committee. I remember on the smoking issue, you know, I was on the other side that we did go to the committee. We did have public input and public concern. I remember a month ago, I asked to go to executive session because I had some legal issues pertaining to some motion that might amended that might have been put in place. I'm very concerned, Mayor. Is number one is why are we rushing into this and on this short a period of time? And on Friday, I believe I try to call. Tone on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Tone. I don't know if you got my email or not. I did email you. I did not receive anything from you. So my question to you, Mr. Perkins, is that what we're talking about today, was this ready in our package today? Or is this going to be ready on Monday or on Tuesday? What we're discussing with all the different changes, and then when would they be ready?
I'm going to try and get them to you tomorrow.
Okay, so therefore I should put everything on hold until tomorrow. What time? At 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 9 o'clock? And the day is Monday, you know. So, and we got a full agenda on Wednesday, and now you telling me that I got to put everything on hold to get to this item for Wednesday? And I think it's unfair to me. Now I'm speaking to myself, you know, because I read majority of amount of amendments in my agenda, and I think Sunday's amended in motion is saying that some of colleagues do not read our book, do not read our agenda, and I'm just going to bring that straight out. And I do read all my assignments, you know, and I do that, and I do keep up with everyone's district, everyone's zoning case as a whole, because that's my job as a council person. If I was not an elected official, I should not be doing that. But since I am elected official, that's my job to do it, and I do this full time. I do not have a part-time job, but some of the colleagues do have other jobs, but unfortunately I do not have to have a part-time job. But saying that, Tom, that it's a courtesy to us, so we have some on a time amount. And I'm still going back to Friday. You know, on Friday, you knew about it, and I didn't get it until the day of. And I'm very, very disappointed in that. You want to address that since I'm speaking to you direct?
What did you not get?
Well, we did not get the form on last Wednesday or last Monday when you had the information on Friday, and we got it the minute of. You want to address it?
We sent out...
No, you had it read on Friday. And when I asked about it on Monday, I got it a couple of minutes before. And I think all the other colleagues received the information.
We sent out, yes, on Friday evening in the package, the proposed ordinance, all three of them, and a memorandum that indicated these are the changes that have been made. All of the council members.
But also, there was some form on the license of registration, the three forms that we had to go get copies, and you gave us that the day of.
Yes.
The day of.
And I apologize.
And the day of. So, right. And I agree with what I'm saying today. We're here at 8 o'clock on a Monday morning, and I was not here at 8 o'clock this morning. But 8 o'clock this morning, we are discussing very important items. Very important to be transparent. And we are not going to get that information, not today, but sometime tomorrow, for Wednesday, to vote on. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I should use my judgment to get some the day of, something very important for me to do my due diligence, in which I feel I'm not ready to do it. I ask for these to be deferred, and I asked last week. And for some reason that when a council requests something, generally, when he asks for deferred, most colleagues say, grant him that opportunity to defer those items so we can vent it out. We have many different objectives to accomplish here. Everybody got a different agenda. There's 14 different councils in the mayor. But the point where I'm asking for my colleagues, I need more time to vent this out. And I'm asking for this item to be deferred, and that's what I'm asking on Wednesday, because I do not have enough time to digest this. And some of these issues that we are talking about, I know we have some legal problem with, because I have some calls, people calling me that we do got some serious problems legally. And I don't want to discuss that now, but we are going to have some. And colleagues, I beg you, look into it. Make sure we're looking at every item and every motion that we're going to vote on. Because why are we rushing 1 week? Smoking, very important. It didn't go 1 week. The insurance, very important. It did not go 1 week. Even though we might say, you know, 2 years ago that we did talk about it, but we did not have a briefing on it. But we did bring it up. And I understand that. But now we just had a briefing last week, and we're going to vote this coming Wednesday. I don't think it's right. And that's just my opinion. And I will express that opinion again on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hockley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah,
We've had a lot of discussion today. There's been some council members who have put together some amendments based on conversations that we've had throughout the week last week. I just want to make sure that we stay focused on the fact that we are trying to become more transparent. And again, this is a step in the right direction. I spoke to a couple of neighborhood groups this past weekend, and they're very much in favor of making sure that City Hall is more transparent, making sure that also that business is still easy to do in the city of Dallas. My area in North Oak Cliff is going to come forth with a lot of zoning issues, and my neighborhood groups are very concerned that those things are going to be harder to manage if we put in a lot of detail. So I just caution the rest of us to be sure that we do not make things so difficult that those of us in the southern sector who are just now pushing for new zoning and new projects don't have a hard time putting through things that we need desperately in our districts. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carroway, briefly.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Let me say I agree with Ms. Hostel, and we do have the responsibility of making sure that we are transparent, and I think that we're moving towards that. It's been a lot of discussion, and this has not been something that we've just decided to start talking about, and I think that we do receive our information, and the information that we receive and the method that we have in moving things forward, the amendments are out here. Certainly we are incorporating the amendments. I think that the need of transparency is something that we all should agree to, and I think that we all do. And I think that if we continue to prolong and nitpick, the harder it's going to get, and then Ms. Hostel, the longer it is going to take for us to bring something to fruition. We can always recognize the fact that we have the power and the ability to amend, even though when we move this thing forward, Mr. Perkins, as I said earlier, when you go and you bring it back, it still has to come back for finalization of the documentation to some degree. But whatever it is, if there's still something that council members are uncomfortable with, we still have the ability, because we are the policy makers, we have the ability to make those changes. So I'm prepared to move forward and continue to study it and agree and to include all of the amendments and give them a fair shot so we can be prepared for Wednesday.
Anybody want to add any other amendments? Okay. We'll put... Do it.
I'm not sure the copies are here, colleagues, but I gave you a memo on the draft. Mr. Perkins' office was kind enough to work hard this weekend and get it into proper legal language. And if the copies are here, I'll hand them out now. If they're not, Mayor, I'll get them to everyone shortly.
And what? Go ahead, Ms. Martin.
I have a question then on the process that you're planning for Wednesday. Will we be provided with a list of possible amendments, or will we have to make
those amendments? You'll get a list. In fact, based on this, I will sit down with Mr. Perkins, and we'll put the pieces together, and we'll say by tomorrow morning.
By tomorrow
morning? A list.
Tuesday morning.
A list, not the amendment, not the 42 ordinances, but much less. A couple of you put the summary together. They'll say 1, 2, 3. We have now that again. If people want to from the floor add amendments, they'll be free to do that. But at least it'll be a starting point, and again, something that will be in a much more formal and organized fashion than we had on some previous issues too. So that'll be the goal. So we'll sit down and we'll go through that today. I appreciate everybody being here. I can tell you, as Ms. Hostel said, everybody is looking at this issue. I had an awful lot of events this weekend, and those, I can tell you, the people in this community, they believe that something should be done. They don't understand what the delay is, and we need to move forward with this. The goal is to make it in a simple, in a straightforward fashion, as Ms. Hostel said. We want to be able to deal with what we can't. We don't want to try to get into every little nuance that we can get into, nor do we want to make this so difficult to deal with the city of Dallas that the reaction is, okay, we'll turn our backs and we'll walk away. We don't want to do that. We want to make something that's transparent, that's visible, that people can have confidence in. That's what I believe the three are, and I would tell you that I believe the three proposals that are laid out with the addition of the fourth are a package that we need to deal with. We need to deal with them together, incorporating the amendments as we've talked about today. Now, with that, what I was going to do is go to speakers, and we'll ask for any speakers. And again, speakers can talk on anything. Ron, do you want to finish this up before we go to speakers?
Well, that may take care of it. I thought we might want to indulge Mr. Williams for 30 seconds.
That's what we're going
to
do.
3 minutes. I mean, I'm sure he'll be glad to take his 3 minutes.
Kirk Williams, 5400 Renaissance Tower. First of all, I've been doing this for 30 years before you and your predecessors. I will comply with whatever you decide to approve, but I think it needs to be limited to elected officials and boards. I don't think any of you can really appreciate the amount of contact that we have with your staff. And to be honest with you, I don't even know who the system directors or what their titles are that I deal with, but we save a lot of time by getting to work with the staff, and I don't think you can appreciate the number of contacts that are going to be listed. I think you should consider some sort of paperless filing. You pride yourself on paper. You cannot appreciate the amount of paper I'm getting ready to give you in all seriousness. I don't think you appreciate the unintended consequences. If I brought a case that is this poorly prepared before you, I would be criticized at a public hearing, and I would like the same courtesy extended to you and your staff that you extended to me. I'm concerned about attorney-client privilege. It doesn't apply to all of the people that do what I do, but under state law, those of you who are attorneys can appreciate this. I am genuinely concerned about what I can divulge and what I cannot divulge. There are sometimes a client says, I don't want you to say who you're representing or what amount of my time is spent on a particular matter, those sorts of things. If you want transparency, you need to have the neighborhood associations be covered by it. You need the Chamber of Commerce covered by it. If this thing's not ready to move forward, I haven't seen the ordinance in its final form. I think I can give you some legitimate benefit. I'm not talking about putting this off forever. If you pass it on Wednesday, I'll be compliant on Thursday. I've got enough staff and I've got enough wherewithal from my firm to make it happen. But I don't think you really appreciate what you're getting ready to get into, and I think to have an ordinance adopted where you're making this many changes from the floor, and let me suggest, I'm going to have plenty of other comments at that point in time, and we're going to have plenty of other people lined up. It needs to be genuinely considered, and you need to address the issue that you're trying to really look at rather than simply check a box and say, we now have a lobbying ordinance. Thank you for your time.
Any other speakers?
Dallas Cosgrove, 900 Jackson Street. I'll echo some of Kirk's sentiments, and we appreciate that Tom and the mayor have been good enough to meet with us. You know, I think for those of us that are regulars, we have to come to the well and have to come back to the well after you're gone too. So, you know, we're only as good as we are honest. And I think, you know, we intend to be, you know, fill out all the paperwork the right way. But I could tell today there are a lot of questions on, you know, Councilman Newman asked a question about, you know, does this cover so-and-so? We want to make sure that it's easy enough that we can do it right and quickly. And so if it's a matter, I think the mayor had a good suggestion, checking a box. Is it correspondence? Is it an email? Is it an in-person meeting? That's fine, but it should be something that's easy enough for us to do that's not going to take a tremendous amount of effort. Our clients, you know, just kind of a test balloon. If Dallas is already the most expensive place to file a zoning case and takes the most amount of time to get it through the process, so that's not necessarily a criticism. There are often larger projects, too, than there are in the suburbs. But we don't want to add to that. And so that's, you know, one of our questions. Kirk certainly, you know, brought up something that's, you know, really important to us as well about the assistant directors. When you pay $10,000 or $12,000 for a zoning case, and that's often the filing fee, dealing with the staff you would hope is included in that. It's not that we don't want to report who we talk to. But sometimes we just don't know. We would need you to publish a list, a roster of who all the people are if we're going to have to comply with that. But it will be, I think Kirk's right, it'll be a lot of city staff members are included that. So I think pretty much everyone in the industry, too, prefers an annual filing fee as opposed to these $25 here and a $25 there. And I know that's something y'all are, you know, amenable to, but I think the way I read it is you got to go to the water department to pay, get your ticket so you can go to Ms. Watkins' office and file it, it'd be real easy for the larger firms if they just paid a fee in January that's, you know, I don't know, $1,000 or whatever it is, and then each time we have to report, because you got to do it in a timely fashion of 5 days, that we can go to the city secretary's office or get online and do it quickly, hopefully, and do that. So, you know, we are, you know, big believers in being transparent. You know, we always tell people who we're representing up here and what we're working on, and not everyone in this industry does that, so we hope that you'll make sure that happens. Thank you. We appreciate it.
We appreciate it. We want to make it simple, and your comment on where you pay and where you file, we want to make sure that's consistent, too. And it's not only this. There's other ones. It's been raised, and you've got some sympathetic ears on that one.
Tommy Mann, 5400 Renaissance Tower. I work for Kirk Hill. I'll try not to repeat anything you said, but I just want to try and introduce a couple more legal issues. One, requiring the disclosure of something that may become a municipal question. I'm not sure that that's, and then making it a misdemeanor to fail to disclose it, I'm not sure you can make that a crime constitutionally, and I'm virtually certain you cannot enforce it. You can't, I don't know whether something for sure is going to become a municipal question. I don't know how you retroactively punish me for not disclosing something that may become a municipal question in the future. So pending matters, limiting it to pending matters would make a lot of sense. Secondly, the nature of the real estate business, for those of you that are involved there probably know, developers typically form single-purpose entities for individual properties. For instance, we did a zoning case on Bennett Avenue that was assembled 2 acres by one parent company, but I think that there were 12 entities involved in the purchase. Do I have 12 clients or do I have one client? And that's a lot of paperwork if that's 12 clients. And yeah, that can probably be clarified in here by specifying a principal corporation or something, but that's how real estate works. And you may be getting, you know, I may have 27 clients on one zoning case if it's a big enough piece of property. So that's something to consider. Finally, related to the disclosure of potential municipal questions, if nothing else, you're creating a reservoir for real estate brokers to come in to the city secretary's office and get a sense of everything that might be happening in a certain area of the city, and I think you need to strongly consider the impact of that on land prices in the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Good morning. I'm Barry Knight, 5400 Renaissance Tower. I was just down meeting with the planning staff on an item. I signed in at the list they have there for you to sign and register and let open transparency, let you know what's going on there. Last week I was out of building inspection. I signed the list letting you know who I was going to meet with, so there's transparency there. Apply for zoning cases, you have the thick application. Signed the zoning application as the applicant representative, transparency as to who's going to be representing the party in that. As part of the zoning application, all the officers and directors of the company need to be listed, so there's transparency as far as that is concerned. I'm wondering just how much this lobbying registration is going to add to the transparency. Really, the transparency is coming in the other direction as far as who is contacting you as decision makers and whether or not you all are keeping a log as to who is contacting you so that there is transparency in that regard. It seems to me that there is a lot of cost and expense, and there's going to be a lot of hidden costs and expense associated with this. I heard Mr. Allen say earlier that some of you might be getting caught in the weeds, and I think you are. And I think that it's so long as there is open disclosure as to who the decision makers are meeting with, then that probably would solve the problem more than what you're trying to do here. Thank you.
Anybody else?
This is the problem. This is I have two questions. I'm going to go forward with the street name change, and I'm going to put $1,000 down as far as I can do that in the process. Now, on this, let's say it moves to the planning commission and goes to the council on this two-vote thing, 2 seconds, how does that work? Let's say that, you know, one of the seconds, I don't get the 2 seconds. Does it mean that you hold it up And explain that to me.
It's not a Q&A period. If you want to make comments, you're more than welcome to do
okay
that.
Okay, then. But anyway, and the second one is this. This is one thing that we're hearing in the community, is that the mayor will designate the two people who are going to get the second. Is that correct?
No.
Well, you said not a Q&A. Is this a Q&A? You go after that?
I'll answer that. That has nothing to do with reality at all.
Okay, then. So why is it you want to answer my first question that I asked? And you said it's not.
Because you're so far off on the second, I thought it was useful to.
Well, okay, but let me tell you something.
Now, if you got questions,
let me finish. I got the floor here. If you do, and I'm going to tell you something. I was trying to tell Ms. Perkins this morning. Anytime that I see that you're going to just overly violate my rights, and I have a right to ask a question, Mr. Mayor, regardless if you think it's too far out or what, I'm going straight to the FBI. And I'm going to call the DOJ and the Department of Justice then. So I'm just letting you know. All right, thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Thank you very much. Mr. Allen, Ms. Medrano, you're up.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Yeah,
we're done.
Yeah, Allen.
No, he's got a meeting coming up. That's why I was pointing to him.
One.
This meeting is adjourned. This meeting is adjourned. This meeting is adjourned.